11.
From the Director, Department of Administrative Services, submitting an informational report providing an update on the courthouse fire recovery. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Tyler, go right ahead.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, thanks so much for allowing us to give you an update today. With me is Dennis Dietcher, who is our interim director of risk management. So what we're going to do this morning is kind of cover four different things related to the courthouse fire. First of all, as it relates to business continuity, how did that occur? Secondly, power. Third, restoration, and finally, insurance. So just kind of a little bit of recap, reminder, electrical fire took place July 6th, affected three buildings, the courthouse, the CJF, the safety building, loss of power. And to my left, I've got Gary Wozek, I believe. Hey, Gary. Who's interim director of facilities management. July 6th, affected three buildings, like I said. Loss of power was to all three buildings, which comprises of approximately 1.5 million square feet of space. Just to put context around that, the U.S. Bank building, I think it's a 40-story building, if I'm not mistaken, that's about 1 million square feet. So the impact was fairly significant. Smoke damage was limited, however, to the courthouse and the skywalk, which, again, of that 1.5 million square feet, that's about 1 million square feet. It impacted approximately 1,200 county, state, and other agency employees. From a continuity standpoint, a task force was initially informally established. There was a dialogue that began very, very quickly between the county executive, myself, Gary Wozek, and Dennis Dietcher. Out of that, kind of informal meeting at a pancake house occurred Sunday morning, the day after the fire, and that was really the beginning of this task force that developed. From that point, a formal team came together and met on a daily basis around noon, and we started at city campus, and that team represented all of the affected department heads and anyone else that wanted to participate in that. We extended invitations to all of the department heads and the chairwoman. The chairwoman had representation there as well. I also had representation from the Milwaukee Police Department with this task force. And the purpose of the task force on a daily basis was just simply to get together and try to better understand, provide everybody with an update in terms of what was going on, and to seek input from all of those that were affected in terms of some of the needs that they might have needed and what's going on with them. I think that the relocation efforts during the time that the courthouse was down was remarkable because of the cooperation and innovation and creativity that the departments had, and that includes really everyone that was in the building coming together and getting creative and finding spots all across the county, either in a virtual way at coffee shops, or finding space at COGS or city campus or out on county grounds. And it's something that I think that we should all be proud of relative to the department heads and how they got creative and the employees in terms of finding ways to continue to do business, regardless of whether it was serving the public needs directly in terms of marriage licenses at city campus, or whether it was doing business, processing the paperwork that we need to do to get the job done. So the relocation efforts, I think, got on the way in a very kind of casual way at the department head level and was very creative in that effort. Really, most areas as a result of that started getting back in business one way or another on the Monday or Tuesday after the fire event itself. What we were working on is getting the power back up. And I wanted to let you know that as it relates to the power itself, Peeper and We Energies were the electrical contractors that were involved in that effort. And from the very beginning on that Saturday of July 6th, it's important to note that it was the courthouse and the safety building that remained down. The jail actually stayed up from a power perspective, but for air conditioning and refrigeration. So our first priority was to get permanent power back to the jail because, in fact, it was up, but it was on generator power. So our first priority on that Saturday afternoon was to get the jail back to permanent power. And I was with Gary down there on Saturday afternoon with the We Energies people when they were coming through the area where the fire was, and it was kind of a remarkable scene to watch Steve Jensen from We Energies kind of doing a cursory inspection, and it was obviously pitch black in there, very smoky, and Steve with his flashlight looking at all the different panels, and obviously most of them were burned out. But he identified one that appeared to be in working condition and identified a way that we could actually reroute the line for the jail to this particular panel. And I remember his comment then up above, I think we can get this done in about 24 hours, which I thought was pretty remarkable given what we were looking at down there. The fact is that I think Gary and Dennis, we got power, permanent power, back to the jail about 8 o'clock that evening on Saturday evening. So it's a real testimony, to me anyway, to the good work that We Energies did then and continues to do for us now. Our second priority, once we got the jail back to permanent power, was to get the generator power to safety building and the courthouse. Again, no power at this point to both of those facilities. And that was achieved in terms of generator power by 4 p.m. on July 8th on a very limited basis to the safety building and then to the courthouse on a limited generator power by 5 p.m. on July 8th. Again, our focus at that point in time was this notion of trying to get limited power to the courthouse and to the safety building for the benefit of being able to get the courts up and running. And then obviously our long-term goal was to get our priority to get back on the grid on a temporary basis, and that took a little bit longer, and we were able to achieve that by July 20th. Which I think, if I'm doing the math, that was about a little over two and a half weeks, which was pretty incredible. That's kind of where we are now. So I think sometimes we forget what's going on right here is temporary. It is we are back to the grid, but we're all of our power supply is still under construction in the design phase. This is all in a temporary configuration that's very much exposed on the 10th Street. They're going through a manhole, basically a cable going through the manhole, giving us temporary power. So it's somewhat fragile and unstable, and it's one of the reasons why we continue to ask our staff to be inconvenienced as it relates to some of the uses of appliances and so forth. In terms of where we are on permanent power, like I said, it's getting engineered and designed right now, and some of it's getting manufactured, and I think Dennis will be able to provide us with an update, but our goal is to actually start seeing stuff come out of the sidewalk on 10th Street and then stuff coming back in through the sidewalk sometime in the late December, early January. Time frame. I don't know exactly what that stuff is, but Dennis can go through it if you want to ask about it. That means that we probably, if things work right, we will have permanent power sometime during the first quarter of next year. Seems like a long, long time. I get that and I understand that, but it's just basically a complete refabrication of the power supply for these three buildings. I want to speak now to the restoration process. From an air quality standpoint, we confirmed very quickly that no air quality or smoke damage issues were in the CGAF or the safety building. so in the CJF in the safety building. But as a precaution, all the workers in the courthouse were required to use protective equipment until air quality was tested and confirmed safe. And when I'm talking about the workers, I'm talking about Gary's and Dennis's team and all of the contractors. We didn't have employees in at that point. Smoke and soot permeated every floor of the courthouse, so comprehensive surface cleaning and air scrubbing was required, including HVAC ductwork, and over 1,000 filters were replaced in the facility. It was amazing to see this huge semi-truck pull up that was just completely jammed full with these filters. So the courthouse, basically the air now today is cleaner than it is on the outside. We didn't provide public access to the courthouse until, again, the air quality testing was completed and was confirmed that it was safe for all people to come into the courthouse without wearing any kind of gear. From a soot damage perspective, it was limited to the first four floors of the courthouse predominantly. And as a result of that, it required carpet and ceiling tile replacement in most areas of the first four floors of the courthouse. In addition to that, what we did was repaint most of the common areas because, again, the soot clinged to the walls and the ceilings, and it was appropriate for us to do that as well. From an insurance perspective, the property insurance provider is the Local Government Property Insurance Fund. That's LGPIF for short. That's an organization managed out of Madison through the State Office of Insurance Commissioner. Brent Hansen is the LGPIF manager that we've been working with on, and she is probably here on a weekly basis. They retain an insurance adjuster, and that insurance adjuster is Crawford Insurance. The reinsurer for the fund is Lexington, and the boiler and machinery insurer is Cincinnati Insurance. Our policy currently has two $75,000 annual deductibles to meet before it drops to $500 deductible for each claim. Obviously, we've gone through that. Mm-hmm. We work daily with the insurance adjuster, Jim Camacho, and we, again, like I said, we work on a weekly basis with the fund. We actually had a meeting last week here with the insurance fund and the DOJ. From the standpoint of flow of funds, what happens is that there's a organization called Universal, and Universal is the general contractor of the restoration process. And the Universal, what they do is basically bill us, and the fund then, the insurance fund pays us based on those invoices, and that's how the flow of funds work. To date, literally, and I'm going to round up or round as an average, so forgive me, we have paid out approximately $6 million to Universal, who has subsequently paid out to their various subcontractors, and we have received from the insurance fund approximately that same amount. I should tell you that there's a fairly large invoice or stack of invoices that the insurance adjuster is reviewing as we speak. Once the insurance adjuster has signed off on those invoices, then they'll get submitted to us, and we will get reimbursed on that. My understanding that amount is roughly $5 million. Don't quote me on that. It'll be plus or minus. So where we're at to date is roughly $10 to $11 million in terms of the total costs. I know it'll be asked. And what I will tell you is that at this point we still don't know what the total amount is going to be. There's still a lot of work that's need to be done, and we really haven't gotten a gauge at this point. You should also know that as far as we understand at this point, everything that has been damaged by the fire is going to be covered by the fire. That's what we, or by the insurance fund. That's what we know at this point. Cause and origin. The insurance provider, or the fund, is actually responsible to complete and manage that investigation. And the way they do that is that they retain the State of Department of Justice to establish the process and the procedure, and that's a typical thing to do, and that's why we met with the DOJ last week, was to basically establish or affirm the protocol and the cause and origin. Again, it's the insurance fund's vested interest to do the investigation because it's the insurance fund that would then seek subrogation payments from potential vendors or contractors that might be responsible for the cause or origin of the fire. What we did directly after the fire was obviously wall off and secure the site for safety reasons, but also for security reasons. Part of the cause and origin process is to, obviously investigate, but collect material and test it and see if there's any way you can discover a cause. That process actually began on Saturday, October 5th, where we must have had about 50 folks come in on Saturday morning and begin the cause and origin process. I think about half of those were lawyers representing various potential interested parties. Also there, obviously, was the county representation, we actually have retained, and Dennis can speak to this a little bit more, a cause and origin expert, not so much to represent us, because we don't necessarily need to be represented at this point, we don't believe, but rather just to be there as a educated and knowledgeable observer, and actually he's done a very good job on our behalf. We have a meeting coming up, I think, on Monday, and I'm going to ask Dennis, after this kind of update, if you like, to give you guys a little bit of a color around what we do to make sure that the investigation process is done as it should be done. But we've got a follow-up meeting, like I said, on Monday, and then a larger meeting on December 7th. Of this investigation team. Important to note that the fire department concluded that this was not arson. I think that one of the things that I found interesting, as old as our equipment is, the panels in fact seem to concentrate the fire itself and protected the fire from spreading into other parts of the basement. Just want to talk about possible losses that might not be covered. Like I said, thus far, everything that we know about is covered. Items that may not be covered are equipment damage due to lack of maintenance or what have you that was actually impacted by the fire. We don't know at all of any of those pieces of equipment. But the comptroller has set up two distinct accounts for the fire. And I think you might have heard about this. One account is the courthouse infrastructure improvements capital account of $2 million, and that's been set up for expenses potentially related to the fire, but not covered by our boiler and machinery or property insurance. Again, on this account, nothing has been used out of this fund at this point. There's another account, a courthouse major maintenance improvement account of $200,000, and that's been set up by the comptrollers to cover costs related to maintenance items that we've discovered as a result of the fire. Again, it's not because of the fire, but due to our getting around and about, we've discovered items that needed maintaining. And an example of that is that we're covering the cost of $100,000 of cooling units or cooling coils, I think, that need to be replaced in the CJF tower. So those are two accounts that you might have heard about. Current situation, and I'm almost done. From a continuity standpoint, we continue to have meetings on a daily basis, 10 a.m. meetings with Universal, with PEEPER, and all of the other vested parties that are involved in the continuation of the restoration process. 10th Street exit will continue to be walled off until permanent power is installed, and like I said, that probably will be the case through the end of the first quarter or somewhere thereabouts. So that means annex parking will continue to have limited access for the benefit of the supervisors and other elected officials. We know that that's a bit of an inconvenience in terms of how you have to navigate in and out of there, but most of the employees that had annex parking have been asked to move to the brewery parking garage. And we recognize that that two-and-a-half block walk can be a little bit difficult because of the traffic. I think it's on Highland Avenue. And what we've done is we've posted security forces to stop people on that very busy street for pedestrian crossing. I'm also talking to the folks at MATC, and they've given me a verbal okay to have their shuttle service that they have to and from MATC to the brewery parking garage, to have them stop at the 9th Street entrance. So I'm just trying to get them to get to yes on this. I think they want to do that, but they've got to go through the bureaucracy to get it to yes. And I think that'll be helpful for employees that have to work late at night and are uncomfortable taking that walk or when it gets cold out. So I think that'll be a reasonable solution. Like I said before, we still are asking employees to refrain from using personal appliances. Let's see. I think that that's probably all I've got. It's probably enough, right? Thank you.
Mr. Tyler, what you just read from, we would like the next time, like a written report, because you have all the information, so we can chronicle what you have just stated. I mean, I like hearing what you're saying, but if we have it in front of us, we can formalize better questions. Supervisor Bukowski, you have a question?
I do. Well, actually, I have three things. One is, and I don't know if it's a myth, but I wanted to ask you about this. Did an employee get hurt prior to the fire, maybe 2 or 3 days prior to the fire? There seems to be a story that's floating around, and I would like to know if that's accurate.
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I have not heard that rumor, and I'm going to look to see if Gary might be able to add some color.
Chairman, Supervisors, and Don, I'm sorry for rushing in late. I haven't heard that rumor floating around, and my first question would be the details of that rumor. What, when, where, who, how is it related? I haven't heard anything regarding an employee being injured and would gladly look into that.
It's my understanding it was 2 or 3 days before the Saturday fire. It's my understanding that it was somebody in the district attorney's office. It's my understanding that in touching something, there was an electric shock. It's also my understanding that this person has been on disability at least 3-4 months. So that's a lot of stuff there that if it's a rumor...
Chairman, Supervisors, I did hear about that.
Okay.
I don't know how that would be related or in any way tied to the courthouse fire. If anything, there's a lot of old sound systems. There's, in fact, right now a capital project ongoing for replacement of the old sound systems. But I did hear the same thing.
Well, Mr. Wozniak, I'm not an attorney, but I don't think that it's a reach that if there was some kind of electrical shock and this was an electrical fire, that some kind of connection couldn't be made. So I would hope that you wouldn't just dismiss that. My second point is, Mr. Tyler, now I'm hearing you say that 10th Street's not going to be open until the first quarter. You had stated when you were here last month that it was December, January. Now, if... my understanding is March, April?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, yes, when I met with Judiciary, I think that was the time frame that I had suggested. That still might very well be the case.
December, January.
It may be. You find me to be fairly conservative in my framing things out. One thing that has been delayed maybe it's been delayed, or maybe we didn't fully expect how long it would take, is the cause and origin investigation. Because of the number of parties that want to be engaged in the investigation, it's been difficult for us to get all of those parties together at the same time. And as a result of that, the cause and origin investigation is taking longer than what we had originally expected. We can't pull anything out until the completion of the investigation.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I got the answer. So at Judiciary, you said December, January. Now you're saying first quarter. So what are you saying now?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, to be conservative, I'm saying first quarter.
March, April.
Sometime between January and end of March.
My final point, and it's just something that I've noticed, and I think most, if not all of us, go through the safety building, and so come through that way, and there's two elevators, and they are very overworked. I'm amazed at how many times they're actually disabled, so then it's one elevator. And I'm semi-amused that between like 8 and 9 o'clock, invariably, there's, one of the housekeeping's huge trash thing that, you know, ends up taking a majority of the space sometimes, or deliveries come in. It would seem to me that, people would be cognizant of the time that a majority or many people are using those two elevators, that you wouldn't have large crates or whatever that would be monopolizing the room and in an elevator. And the point, it just seems like it happens on a frequent basis. And I just thought I'd mention that to you all, because I'm not saying that, you know, I just think that people ought to know that from 8 to 9, that those two elevators are going crazy.
Thank you. We'll look into that.
All right, we're going to go to Supervisor Jerzyk now.
Real quickly, we have an attorney representing the Milwaukee County in the cause and origin inspection. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, we have corp counsel.
I thought you said you hired an outside attorney.
I'm sorry. To be clear, we hired an outside expert in cause and origin, and not an attorney, but an expert on cause and origin investigations.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. And when you talk about closing the 10th Street exit, is there any way that the underground passageway, because you can take an elevator down and then through, is there any way that could be opened?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'm going to pass this on to Dennis, and it's what you'll find in a couple weeks. There's going to be a lot of activity in that parking area and that entrance, but Dennis can elaborate.
That path that you're talking about actually would take you right past where all of our electrical equipment and the room is. And actually down that path is where we are going to be removing the panel that is in the sidewalk that will give us the access that we need to move large equipment in and out. So that whole area right there is part of the cause and origin process, part of the area that is extremely limited access, and it remains part of the area that we need to protect from people going in and out, et cetera. And so it's definitely a major part of our construction scene.
So it's a no.
It's a no.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Washa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before the fire, where was the electrical system in the capital budget? What priority?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, I don't know. I'm going to look to Gary to see if he knows. It's certainly the CBRE report reflected that it was something for us to look at within the next 5 years. But I'm not sure whether it was in the 5-year capital project or not offhand.
Chairman, Supervisors, the electrical system as a whole was not in the 5-year plan for replacement.
Okay. Interesting. On the, cleaning that took place and the replacement of the ceiling tiles and the carpeting, why wasn't the cubicle fabric and things like that not replaced. If we're replacing the carpet, if we're replacing the ceiling tile, why weren't the cubicle partitions replaced that are made of fabric and absorb just as much, if not more? So could you respond to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Supervisors, I think we had the fabric, from my understanding. I'm going to look to Dennis on this, but you know, what we're talking about is horizontal space versus vertical space.
That's correct. The difference between the two, to try and clean the carpet and then come back and have to do things again, it gets to be where you realize that it's just better to replace. When we talk about the cubicle surfaces, the vertical surfaces, those could actually be tested to determine, okay, what are the needs for these? The needs for those was different than the needs for the carpet or the ceiling tile, in that they could be cleaned, they could be reexamined, and they could be found to be in condition that would allow for its reuse. And so when you talk about the ceiling tiles, you take them down, you wipe them, you wait, they dry, you look again, you test, here's some more soot on it yet. You do that a couple of times, it's easier to just take the tile and get rid of it and replace it. And so that's the judgment calls that are made in the loss adjusting process between the claims adjuster and Universal, the cleaning people. And those are just some of the decisions that were made at the time.
Well, at least from my experience in our research area and the cubicle area, there was no take it all apart, clean it, put it back together, and then test it, come back, clean it again, that kind of stuff. It was, you know, you vacuumed up the floor, you vacuumed up some, you know, debris and things like that, and some ceiling tiles. But as far as there being this illusion of some kind of extensive cleaning process, especially for these cubicle spaces, I just don't see it.
Okay, thank you.
I just think one of the things that now that you know, we have everybody cycling through places like the CJF, the entrance there, the entrance to the jail. We have that entrance that is only half functioning because the rotating door has all these orange cones in it. When you look at just the cleanliness of that area, I find it incredibly disturbing. And then when you go down 9th Street, when you look at the entrance there, the hallway there, the lighting for that whole tunnel area, there is you know, at least a dozen lights that are out, and just the whole cleanliness of the area. So I find it strange that we would not make those areas appropriate if they're going to be the main entrances now for the courthouse, which lighting and cleanliness and functioning should be our main priority for the public coming into the building here. So could you respond to those entrances and the conditions that they're in?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'll ask Gary if he has anything to add on that. We are requesting in the budget a fairly substantial increase in facilities maintenance budget. And we acknowledge and agree that there's a lot of opportunity even in the entrance area to clean up things, and we would like to do that. We also have an agreement coming to finance for janitorial services and hope that we can get some movement on that as well.
Chairman, Supervisors, the revolving door at the CGF entrance will be fixed shortly, in the order of weeks. The area underneath 9th Street Tunnel, that entire roof area that is the bottom of MacArthur Square is the city of Milwaukee. The sidewalks are city of Milwaukee, and the lighting and the entire tunnel is city of Milwaukee.
Well, one, I don't accept that as an answer that it's the city of Milwaukee. You know, you guys burned the building down, not the city of Milwaukee. And
excuse me?
Mr. Tyler? Okay. Thank you.
No, they...
Right,
and the thing is that the cleanliness of that area, it shouldn't take a 2014 budget act to make sure that the sidewalk is clean and that the trash can there is emptied and in a functioning mode, and that even the entrance to 9th Street, those automatic doors that they open and close, you know, in a functional manner. The fact is that these are things that haven't been working for months, if not years, on some of these things and the cleanliness. And I would think that if we're going to make our front entrance the tunnel, you would call up your counterpart at the city of Milwaukee and get all of those things taken care of in a professional manner.
Okay.
And the same thing with the door for the CJF over there. It doesn't take some giant budget action. We have a contingency fund. You go spend the money, you get it done. It's an emergency situation. You guys want all the control, get it done, you know, on this stuff. No, I
just come to me.
I understand. Well, the fact is, we look at these capital budget recommendations. I don't see anything in there for the electrical piece. And in fact, it seems that some people were more interested in park pavilions and other things than they were about the real mechanics of this building. And when I look at the cleanliness of these areas where now 90% of the public comes in and out, I find them in total disrepair, and that somebody needs to stand up and take responsibility for that and get it done. And I don't want excuses about budgets of 2014 or others.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank God for insurance, I guess, huh? And this kind of shows that what deferred maintenance can lead to. And I am surprised, and you know, and who's responsible when you put together the five-year capital budget? Why was something like this electrical system, you know, not on the map, let's say? So who's responsible for looking at those types of items to then prioritize them to slide them in with roads and parks and everything else? Who's responsible for that?
Mr. Todd, can you answer that question?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, first I'd just like to say it's we don't know what the cause and origin is, whether it's related to deferred maintenance or not. That's still under investigation. As it relates to the five-year capital project, I'm going to ask Gary Wozniak to weigh in on that because I was not here during that tenure, and I apologize.
Chairman, Supervisors, every year looking at maintenance and capital submittals, whether it's the CIC or the normal process that has occurred in years prior. Like the discussion we had in some of the budget hearings, it's the evaluation of equipment and known repairs, whether it's chillers, which chiller's worse, which chiller's getting worse. It's a fact that throughout the county, there is a lot of work that needs to be done. And given the unlimited funds and perhaps the benefit of crystal balls, we could fix everything and prevent everything. But the simple fact is between the inspection team, facilities inspection team that's currently going around to facilities that is doing that more comprehensive evaluation of facilities and coordinating with that group, and as well as the VFA update that's going on right now, those things are being looked at. Before the courthouse fire, we had the complete infrastructure of the electrical system out at Children's Court looked at because it was part of the update of the VFA. And time constraints, dollar constraints, and every other thing that's involved, again, we can't look at everything at once. It would be a great to have the resources to do that, and I'm not even skirting around saying something was missed. because, again, as it was in the CBRE report, it stated that all the systems should be replaced within 1 to 5 years. That's plumbing, that's electrical, that's heating. I'd love to have the funds to do that. I don't know where would we get the staff to actually do that much work, but that's just simply the life that we, as well as all the other maintenance areas out there, deal with, is trying to evaluate and prioritize that work that needs to be done. Again, short of a cause and origin determination of what caused the fire, I don't know that we can say that that was deferred maintenance, as opposed to, like Mr. Tyler mentioned early on, the integrity of those cabinets is what prevented the fire from spreading elsewhere. Those old cabinets, like an old Chevy that's dependable in a car accident, that those cabinets contain the fire to be just inside those cabinets. If they were newer cabinets, who knows if it would have burned through, but that's just what we deal with, trying to prioritize all of our work.
Maybe we should not replace anything then, because of it. No, that's the scenario. No, I know what you're saying. I the older stuff is better. I mean, hell, my grandma has a fridge from the 50s in the basement that still runs, at least keeps the beer cold. Yeah, which is very important. Okay, so now here's a question. So summertime, I don't spend a lot of nights and weekends down here, but now that I can't be out in my yard or doing things that I need to do around the house, I'm down here more often, like on a Saturday or a Sunday. Normally, we park in the annex, go through the front door, come on up. What do you want us to do if we want to do some work here in the evenings, do some work on the weekends? Where do you want us to park?
Chairman, supervisors, unfortunately, parking is what it is right now, from parking at the Pabst or for supervisors parking in the lot and coming around. I know that there was discussion, there was previous discussion on the timing, and like getting permanent power up to the jail and generator power and other things, you know, I always hate throwing a date out there, because then you get committed to that date.
Right.
If we're talking about a hard date, then we try to make that, but every effort's being made to get this work done sooner, so that it isn't first quarter, but the January time frame.
So the question is, if I want to come down here on a Saturday, where do I park? Where do I enter the building?
Same as I think you're doing right now. Park in the annex and come around the north end of the building to the CGF front entrance.
Okay.
And as soon as we can possibly open up that tunnel and the 9th Street,
sure,
we're going to do
it. Otherwise, go the way we're coming in now. All right.
Correct.
And the last thing is, and Supervisor Weishon kind of brought it up, you know, the administration, the county executive, I think maybe he could pick up the phone, or you, your counterpart in the city of Milwaukee, and ask them to clean up down there. I mean, this is the second year in a row that the administration's recommended budget is pumping over $1 million into the city of Milwaukee's budget. So maybe there could be a little reciprocal favor and say, you know, hey, we maybe just like a few light bulbs, you know, I mean, we might get something for $1 million plus that we're giving you for your park patrol, your police officers, and things like that. So maybe, just maybe, a dozen light bulbs, a street sweeper, something like that they could do as a favor for, you know, how we, like I said, we're pumping in money into the city of Milwaukee. So that would just be a thought that maybe, you know, they must talk a lot, because it seems like budgeting is done for their benefit sometimes. So that's all I have to add.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler.
Mr. Chair and supervisors, I can't dispute that at all. I think it's a good idea. I think I share the same perspective in terms of our entrances for our employees and for our public. You know, there's things that should be done, can be done, and I think that's a good way. The gum on the sidewalk drives me crazy.
Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand from prior comments that we're not able to open up the tunnel on the west side of the building. I'm wondering if there's a way that, instead of having to leave the annex parking lot through the north end, we can also open a walking pathway through the south end as well, so then we would have an option of entering the courthouse on the south end.
Mr. Chair and supervisors, we actually pushed very hard on that concept, and I'm going to let, because it seems logical, you know, why not make it available through the south side as well? And Dennis, I'm going to ask you to respond to that relative to the insurance commissioner's concern, and Dennis, heading up risk, concern as well.
That area along 10th Street has suffered some damage itself, number one. Number two is between the security and the safety issues and our extremely heavy-duty power being right out there, right outside. Those are the reasons why we don't permit doing what you're inquiring about.
But sir, are you speaking about on 10th Street, or are you speaking about within the annex at the south end of the parking
lot?
Both. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair and Supervisor, I just want to say, you know, we brought this up with the insurance commissioner. It wasn't the insurance commissioner, but it was Bryn that said, made it clear, we don't get a second chance on this when we were talking about, well, can't we do this? And so they're taking it pretty seriously.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When talking about the cause of origin expert that the county has hired, you seem to use careful language about them not representing us or not. I'm not sure why, what the words were specifically, but they seem to be chosen very carefully, and I'd like to understand why.
The cause and origin, Dennis Dietcher, by the way, the cause and origin effort is a consolidated effort. However, it is headed up by the fund and the Commissioner of Insurance office. Our position is to make sure that our interests are represented in that, and that we help to accommodate expediting the process so that the efforts towards establishing cause and origin and the insurer's ability to subrogate back to any responsible party is maintained. And so we brought on a cause and origin consultant to do that with us. We want to maintain the dialogue that we are maintaining with our cause and origin expert and their cause and origin experts. Those experts, they are just that, cause and origin experts. They're not cause and origin attorneys, but they work then through our Corporation Counsel office and the Department of Justice attorneys. So that's kind of the lay of the land, the arrangement in regards to cause and origin.
When you were before us last month at Judiciary, I think there were some comments critical of the fact that we didn't seem to be represented in that process. So has this expert been brought on since then?
You are correct.
Okay. So I do appreciate that. I still didn't understand what the words were saying that this person didn't represent us, when I think that's a piece of the role.
We found that to be something that we needed, and we wanted to make sure that we covered all of our bases and that we were putting our best foot forward, and that was the way that we felt was the best way to do that, to have somebody like that of our own. And he has been very beneficial to that cause and origin group. And the things that have happened because we have brought him on are very positive. Okay. In regards to that.
I appreciate that. I understand why we must do everything possible, to provide access for our insurer and their investigation. Who are the other parties, and what control are they exerting on this? It sounded like there was that because some people aren't available that might want to be part of this, that there are delays. And I guess I'm trying to understand who they are. If they are outside parties who are afraid that they're going to be sued as part of this, or, who are these other entities, and what control are they having in setting our timeline or delaying our conclusion of this investigation so we can start rebuilding?
Mr. Chair and Supervisors, I'll give you a high-level response, and maybe Dennis or Corp Counsel can be expansive. There appears to be the potential for them being an interested party, a vendor or manufacturer, the fund will notify them. And to the extent that they want to engage in this process, they have the opportunity to do so. Since it is the fund that is managing the investigative process, we work with them in trying to find the right balance between our desire and sense of urgency in getting back up and running and their need in the investigation process to provide adequate access to those organizations that might be subject to future litigation. So that's kind of the high-level response. I don't know if Dennis has anything to add or Corp Counsel.
So but the fund is in control. They are in control. So these other parties are not setting the timeline or
that's correct.
Yeah. And has anything changed in terms of the status of, last month you seemed to want to talk in closed session. We were told we didn't need to at that time. Has anything changed in relation to any lawsuit or expectation that we're going to be pulled into a lawsuit?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, not that we are aware of. Nothing has changed.
Thank you.
All right, committee, what we're going to do, Mr. Tyler, we would like you to come back next month, give us an update again. We would like it in written form and like also use your notes so we can have something. And I like you have the definition of calls and reactions. Thank you. And just highlight the five things that you stated earlier and the timetable, what you first see, how they get into the parking structure, how we're going to look how to get into the building on Saturday and Sunday. Because Ms. Rozak had on Saturday and Sunday, that gate is closed and should be locked. That's my understanding on 10th Street, unless she changed it, because a number of supervisors want to keep their cars over the weekend. They kept saying it would be closed. But if it's not, just put it in the report. We don't have to dispute it. Madam Clerk, do you have any comments?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, I just wanted to inform you all that this item will also be presented before the Finance, Personnel, and Audit Committee.
Okay. So we are just going to have nothing, but we would like you to come back next month, give us more definition report, and I appreciate your written report. And thank you for coming, and thank you for presenting to us.
Yeah,
all right. Thank you. Madam Clerk, item number 12.